when the market does turn, those agents will suffer, and they're usually the first to drop out of the game. They're usually the first to leave the industry and get on to other things because it wasn't as easy to make money. And those who are working to an internal process, which we teach a lot at Hive, they'll always prosper because you're working to an internal base of systems and standards and diligence through good and bad markets. So when the market does turn, your growth trajectory should never change.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. With thanks to our partner Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking and strategies to elevate your results. To get access to all of Elite Agent's premium resources, including a detailed episode guide for this podcast, visit joineliteagent.com. And for more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier on your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of today's show. My guest today is Josh Morrissey, the director of Hive Property in Canberra. Josh established Hive in 2018 with a focus on doing things differently. In the last year, he's personally sold more than 252 properties while also growing the team. So, Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks for coming up from Canberra.
Pleasure. Absolutely. Pleasure is all mine. Trust me.
Now, I was researching you in the lead up to this podcast and I noticed that there's something that regularly makes a cameo in your marketing, and that's a Harley. Mm-hmm. I've got to ask you first up, a motorbike, something that you've always had a passion for.
Absolutely. I've always ridden them. And I think when we were trying to think of a point of difference for the brand, we wanted something that would sort of stick in people's minds. You don't usually associate bikes with real estate. It's usually high end cars, and it's just a bit of fun. It's just a play on my personality and my personality coming through the brand. So, and it worked because you brought it up. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So let's talk about your real estate journey. Did mm-hmm. you choose real estate, or did real estate choose you?
I'd have to say probably a bit of both. Always loved it, like every agent says. I've always loved real estate. But I think, I got into it when I was young, probably 18 to 20. Had a stint, like most 18 to 20-year-olds. Probably liked to party a little bit too much, so the weekends didn't suit me as well as it should. But I actually gave it up, got on the tools, did a trade for a few years, and then just was drawn back to it and been doing it ever since.
So you started Hive Property in Canberra in 2018. What mm-hmm. was it that prompted you to start your own agency?
I think most of all, probably just seeing a hole in the market. I think in Canberra really needed a high-end brand for projects and residential. And we just saw a hole there, we thought, that needed to be filled. And we wanted fluidity with the brand. We wanted to be nimble. We didn't want to franchise. We looked at doing that. But we wanted to create something that was completely fresh, completely new, something people could get excited about, and a brand people would get excited to work for. And yeah, that's really how it came about. It's been 3 years now and going really well.
So speaking of a brand that people want to work for, a good friend of mine works for you, Nikki Horner.
Yes.
And a lot of people in the industry know Nikki. What's it actually like to work with her? Can you give us the spill?
She's the best. Yeah, she's my left arm, and Tom Wiggins, who's my other assistant, is my right arm, we say. But she's an absolute weapon. We're at the point now we're finishing each other's sentences and she's two steps ahead of me. So, she's an asset to the team. The team wouldn't move and the business wouldn't be where it is at the moment without her as well. She's an absolute asset.
Yeah, she's a good egg. Good egg, yeah. So you mentioned somewhere that you're a bit of an anti-agent, and I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what that means.
I think that's Nikki's work there, in the write-up on the bio. Just referring to not being a cookie cut agent, I think. I think there's a bit of a perception that people have from the outside of the industry of real estate agents as a blanket whole. Like some real estate agents, sorry guys, don't like most of you. And I think that's more referring to just being down to earth. I think a lot of real estate agents struggle to find a point of difference, and they struggle to. It is a competitive industry, everybody says and does the same thing. And I think agents more so in this industry find it really hard to be themselves. A lot of people, they see a lot of the top guys operating and just try to mimic them. And you see it all the time, a lot of mirror copycats. But I think that's what that refers to, is just agents just need to be themselves, find out just reflect, find what you're good at and just do more of that. Stop trying to do what everybody else is doing.
It is tricky because I think, you know, there's so much training and stuff out there where everyone just copies everyone else and it never...
It's good. It's good for a base, you know, and I think you should really try to align yourself with people and training to get the basics, but make it yours. You know, that's what we did with Hive. That's what I encourage all the other agents to do, and try to find somewhere that aligns with where you're trying to go and what you're trying to do, and a place that actually fans your flames and allows you to be yourself. You know, I think that's the most important thing because people just get caught up.
Yeah, I love the name Hive, actually. Mm. Is there a story behind that?
It's just cool.
It feels like activity
And so it's we just came up with it because we really liked it. We just thought it was fresh and, you know. But when you actually – the story we'd like to tell people is that, well, the honeycomb is actually the most geometrical shape and pattern in Mother Nature. So – that being said, the Hive is actually probably the most busiest. So you look at it from the outside, it's smooth, like our brand, but inside we're just a bunch of crazy little bees. So that's probably the backstory. But originally, no, we just came up with it. It sounded really cool. It was just something fresh.
That is cool.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Canberra because Canberra's auction results have been crazy for the last year, really.
Yeah.
And it's been a very stable market. So Sydney and Melbourne have had their highs and lows. Mm-hmm. What's happening on the ground in Canberra at the moment?
It's busy. Stock is actually probably it's a bit lower than what it usually is. But obviously interest rates are driving, I wouldn't say panic spending, but it is driving, the urgency in the market. And I think too, reflective of that, you've got a lot of agents that are, and Nikki's actually on the back end of this. So you've got, Nikki's actually trying to buy a house and she's reaching out to multiple agents at the moment, trying to buy a place. And agents, they've just got so many inquiries. They're so busy. They're just not getting back to anybody. And that's probably just a lesson to anybody listening that, in a good market, anyone can make money and anyone can sell a house. But when it turns, you know, that's when you really need to be diligent because people like Nikki, who's trying to buy a house at the moment, agents aren't even getting back to her because there's so many buyers out there. Property's turning over, but obviously nothing lasts forever. But it's busy. There's in terms of records, I think we've actually, the last 12 months, financial year, we've broken more suburb records than any other agency in Canberra, which is no mean feat. I don't think any agency's ever done it out of the gates. But that's every weekend. You know, every weekend there's another record getting broken.
Yeah.
Just because, stock is low and, demand is really high. So
that is interesting what you say at the moment because I've had a couple of chats to Nikki about her search for a house and I think it's a very common problem out there at the moment where the underbidder misses out and then doesn't hear from anyone again.
Yeah.
But the market will turn again, right?
It will. And I think, you know, when the market does turn, those agents will suffer. You know, because, you know, those who have been diligent now in a hot market, and we always talk about there's an internal process and an industry process. And I think that, you know, like we're talking about, you know, a lot of the general training, everyone, you know, when you talk to most owners, they feel like most agents are just coming off a conveyor, but we're all saying the same thing. We're all trying to get to the same place and no point of difference. The industry process, that's probably where I'm getting at with the anti-agent. I think that's the perception that people are getting at. Is that we're all saying the same thing. There's a lot of underquoting getting around. And I think that's probably more due to poor training and poor leadership probably where a lot of these people are actually working. And that's transcending through the market into bad service. And I think when the market does turn, those agents will suffer and they're usually the first to drop out of the game. They're usually the first to leave the industry and get on to other things because it wasn't as easy to make money. And those who are working to an internal process, which we teach a lot at Hive, they'll always prosper because you're working to an internal base of systems and standards and diligence through good and bad markets. So when the market does turn, your growth trajectory should never change. And I think that's really important.
People not getting back to people, like it also just comes down to, oh, my God, I'm just too busy. If I had 10 cents for every agent that said right now, I'm so busy.
You're never too busy.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you make the time to make sure that you get back to those people?
So some advice I give young agents coming through is work in blocks and prioritise. And there's a good example. So if I was to give you 100 grand, say, Sam, I need you to crank out 100 calls by lunchtime. And if you do it, I'll give you 100 grand. You're going to get those 100 calls done. It's priority and urgency, you know. And I think you know, people mistake being busy with momentum. You know, you can dig a hole and fill a hole all day. You've been busy, but you've achieved nothing. It's a similar thing. And I think working in blocks is really good. You know, I don't do any appointments before 1 o'clock. So I'll make sure that if I've got any calls that need to go out, I'll do them before, you know, say 9 and 11 when my brain's fresh. I know when my peak times are. So I do that. And then clean up my emails middle of the day. And then after one, that's when I'd be out doing deals.
Yeah, interesting. So you're sort of managing energy.
Managing
rather
energy.
Than time, yeah.
And when, and working, you know, and that's another thing that we talk about a lot at Hive is operating time and thinking time. Don't think in money and dollars, you know. Don't focus on the pennies and the cents. Focus on the time, because the time is a thing that you can quantify. You can't, you know, money always doesn't come back the way it should.
And you're so right. If someone said to me $100,000 to sit there and make 100 calls.
You do 200. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, every day. Every day of the week.
It's just priorities. And then it's just, and I think just having the intent to do it. And I think it just comes back to your why and, you know, what your purpose is and being organized as well. I think a lot of agents aren't organized. You know,
yeah.
Just got to do it.
Let's just call
it. Suck the lemon first and get it out of the way, you know?
Yeah. So speaking of systems and leading people, we ask experienced leaders such as yourself a set of questions called the Leadership Diaries. So I thought it might be cool to run through those with you just to help out people who might be thinking about leadership or going their own business.
Yep.
So are you ready?
Uh-huh.
Yep. Okay. So what was your first job and what did it teach you?
My first job would have been, I would have been 16 working at Superbun, I think, just on the checkout. And to be honest, it probably taught me that I didn't want to work in a shop. It probably taught me there and then that I was going to be a businessman and an entrepreneur. And that's actually probably what it taught me. Obviously, to show up on time and, you know, all the other ethics that come with work. But probably just taught me what I don't want to do and where I want to go early on. Yeah, I always knew really young.
Wanted to be your own boss.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what is one common myth about leadership, particularly in this industry, that you'd like to set straight?
I'd have to say people probably think it's easier than what it is. And there's a big difference between being a boss and being a leader. And I think if you're going to take on the responsibility of being a leader, you really need to look at what it entails. And I think you really need to take it holistically and seriously. And I think if you're going to do that, you really need to start with yourself, look at yourself, where you need to improve before you start setting out to go and impact the lives of others. You need to make sure you're the best version of yourself and you've got a plan. That's probably the biggest one. I think the big difference between those two.
Do you think some people get to the leadership position and then think, all right, I've made it. Now I can just do whatever I like.
Yeah. And I do. Yeah. And I think it's ever evolving. And I think, you know, your culture is mirrored by the buy-in that you have on yourself and your leadership. And I think your business will always reflect that, you know. But I think, you know, yeah. And I think knowing your, you really need to know your why in business as well. And I think you need to always have that driving force and intent behind what you're doing.
So let's talk routines. You talked a little bit about your routine earlier. So what does the first hour of your day look like? Are you like a 5 a.m. clubber or?
No. I don't drink. So actually, I just did 12 months sober, which is really good. Probably the best 12 months of my life. Well, I've got two kids now, so when I started real estate, my morning routine was very different. Now I've got a 2.5-year-old and an 8-week-old. So for me, I need exercise to keep my mind centered. So that's my outlet. So 5 a.m. for me, wake up at 5, straight to the gym. Back at home, break it with the kids, kids or one to daycare, and then off to work. And then it's just calls, emails, and then the structure that we spoke about.
Who are three people that have been influential to you in your career and why?
To be honest, I've probably only got one, and that's Marty Fox. You'll probably know him.
Keep seeing him in socks, but he won't wear them.
Yeah. I'll make sure he gets a pair on. Yeah, I never really gravitated towards anyone, unfortunately. You know, I didn't really have good role models. I think that's why, you know, I moved only hopped a couple of brands until I started my own, but I never really gravitated towards anyone that reflected where I was trying to go, you know, until I met Marty. And learned a lot from him. We're really good mates. And it's probably the only one, I would say, and still ongoing, yeah.
What's a big lesson that you've learned from Marty? Because he's very popular out there, isn't he? Like lots of people follow him
and stuff. But a misconception of it, he is what you see, you know. He's not It's not put on. You know, I think the biggest thing that I've learned and continue to learn is the priority and the balance. It's family first with him, and same with me. I think that's why we gravitated towards each other, I guess, because we're both, you know, he started his business 2 years before me when he had Freddie. So newborn, new business, all crazy, all new things to learn. And we were the same with James. So there was a lot of parallels between us. We're born a week apart and all this other weird stuff. But just learning how to manage that. And obviously he's got a marketing business attached to his business and he's, you know, and the advocacy and a bunch of other stuff. But just how to continue your growth trajectory while being a good husband, good dad, good leader, good mate, and just staying balanced. Because I think that's probably the most important thing. The business, if you're taking care of yourself, the business will take care of itself, you know.
You have a young family. Mm. How do you manage to, you know, I don't think it's called work-life balance anymore. I think it's called work-life integration or
it
something
yeah,
like
yeah.
that. But
yeah,
how
yeah.
do you manage being a good dad with being a great leader?
Just priorities, you know, and I think it's holistic. I look at success, it's a holistic mindset, you know, and I think success for me just isn't business, you know, and I think it's all aspects of life. It's health, it's family, it's business. And I think if you're trying to do the best in each, it will complement the other, you know, and I think that's how I balance it, you know, and just priorities. And I think where I really struggled was to, I really struggled to switch off. I think that was my biggest, I think that's what most business people, just really hard to switch off and just be present. And that took work. That was probably the hardest thing to do, to be honest. And it's probably resonating with a lot of people at the moment, because that was the hardest thing to do, is actually to switch the phone off. I'm home at 6 o'clock every night now, you know, to have dinner with the kids and my brain's still ticking, but phone goes down as much as I can, you know, and just be present and enjoy time with the people around you, because there's no point writing millions of bucks and, you know, just blasting through the market when you can't just sit down and enjoy it with your family. Yeah, you know, what's the point?
So do you have a tip on, you know, for some people that are sort of thinking, no, I cannot live without my phone for an hour?
Put it down. And that's another thing in my morning routine. I do not look at my phone until I'm, you know, like obviously use it for music in the gym, but nothing work related until I'm in the office. Because I think you're starting the day on the defensive, you know. You're looking at an email, you're trying to problem solve before you've even woken up, and it's, you know, the cortisol's running a million miles an hour. It's just not a good way to start the day. So just turn it down, lock it in a box, get rid of it. It's not healthy.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. Yeah. It's that, you know, that hour of the morning that you should protect, I think, intensely, like that first hour, because otherwise you start reacting to other people's problems.
It does. And
problems.
It sets your day, you know, and I think morning routine, I used to try to meditate. I tried a lot of different things. Different things are going to work for different people, but it sets your day. If you win the morning, you win the day. You win the day, you win the week, you win the week, you win the month, so on and so forth. So all starts at 5 a.m.
So who are you learning from right now?
Just be Marty. Marty, you're getting a plug, mate. I'd say in terms of business, just Marty. I've got a lot of other business ventures and other things going on that I learn from. But directly in real estate, definitely be Marty. Marty and Aiden. Aiden actually from White Fox Marketing, which is the other arm of their business. We learn a lot from those guys from the marketing end. Yeah, I'd say those two for sure.
So they do marketing as well because their marketing is very impressive.
Yeah. So, and they're a world-class marketing service that sells real estate, essentially. So they've got obviously a high-end property arm and the marketing arm, which do, you know, just marketing for your general clients. But they're just phenomenal humans, you know, and Aiden as well. He's a really good person that we've learned from. But just brilliant people, you know, like brilliant people that transfer to brilliant businessmen, you know, and I think that's why we gel. And I think too, for anyone listening that's looking to start their own brand or their own business or franchise or just get into real estate, is just align yourself with people that you either look up to that are doing better than you or, you know, doing what you would like to do, and align yourself with those guys and just sponge it up and learn as much as you can. There'll be few and far between, but you'll know them when you find them.
So looking back, what do you think has been your biggest learning experience as a leader?
Probably just how much you learn about yourself, I'd say. Just how much you learn about yourself as a whole. I think you constantly, you constantly have to be working on yourself so others can benefit from it. You know, you really do. You really have to be evolving and pushing yourself and leading from the front so that your team will follow, you know, and it's every day, it's every minute, it's ever evolving. You can't take your foot off the gas. So that's probably the biggest thing. Just more about what you learn about yourself, I would say.
Yeah. Always be learning too.
Always be learning and be open to learning. Be open minded. You know, don't be closed minded. And you've got to be nimble. Got to be ready to move and make decisions quick. And just be open to it. But yeah, definitely.
So what's the most important thing you're working on right now and how are you making it happen?
I've got a lot of other business ventures going on, houses and property and other bits and pieces. But to be honest, it's probably just working on that, being present. You know, that's probably the biggest thing. It's probably internal. It's not the business stuff. It's just actually enjoying it, you know, enjoying life and just being present with the family, enjoying my team, enjoying what we're doing, and actually just smelling the roses. Things are just moving at such a blistering speed. You blink and a week's gone, you blink and a month's gone, and you don't even take time to appreciate what you're doing. So I definitely say that.
Yeah.
Just being present.
Do you think sometimes with agents, you know, maybe they spend a whole lot of time thinking, oh, I'll get to this GCI level and then I want to buy a car, and then they buy, get there and then it's like, they've forgotten that.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's two things. Most people spend 90% of time thinking and 10% doing. And the other one is a really good saying that success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. So you've got to have that sense of fulfillment along the way. And that comes back to, you know, your why and why you're doing it, you know. I think it's really important, not losing sight of it. Because then you're not enjoying the journey. All the money in the world's not going to make it, you know, it's not going to solidify it. You're just going to have more money.
That's a very stoic view on life that, you know, reminds me of Ryan Holiday's book. Yeah. So what's your favourite question to ask someone in a job interview and what does it tell you about the person?
It's a good one. I'd have to say, it's what is your why? I'm really big on that. I think success is your why reverse engineered. So I think if you can ask somebody what their why is and they should know it, it's really easy to get a gauge of that person, where their head's at, where they want to go. And then you can help put plans in place to get them there as well. Everyone's got different whys and different goals. And I want people in my business that have a very clear path of where they want to go, and I want to help them get there. They're always going to be different. And I think that's the other thing too. We look for shepherds, not sheep. You know, we want leaders. We want people with a clear vision. So definitely that, because you can't hit a target you can't see. I'm really big on that. But yeah, I definitely have to say, what is your why? That's the best one. And that'll answer every question that I have.
Does it also tell you whether you're going to be able to work with that person or not?
Yeah. And you're going to get an honest answer, you know. It's an honest question. It's an honest answer, and you can't bullshit it, you know. Like, and I think if you don't know what your why is, and that's probably something for people listening. If you really don't know, get a pen and paper and figure it out, because, you know, you're not going to get to where you want to go if you can't see it in the mind's eye. You're not going to get there.
For me, I remember it being like a real process of asking myself the question, why do I want to do this? Well, to earn a dollar. Why do I want to earn a dollar? And just keep asking yourself why until you finally get to.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people say, I want options, but why do you want options?
Yeah. Well, why dictates how. So if you know why, how will just take care of itself, you know. You've got to be clear. And if you're not, get a pen and paper and figure it out, because until you do, you're going to be going in circles.
So what does leadership at home look like?
So Sam's the boss at home.
Oh, good name.
I've got a Sam. Yep. she's definitely the boss at home. Leadership at home, we really involve parents. We just, two boys, love being around them, try to set a good example, really active. But leadership at home, I'm probably last. Probably come after the dogs. Probably Sam, the two boys, the two dogs. I'm probably somewhere down the end, to be honest.
Who was it that said that leaders eat last?
Yeah. I don't know. It's a good quote.
Yeah, true. How do you motivate people when listings are tight? Like you just mentioned a bit earlier that volumes are still a little bit low in Canberra.
That's again, back to your why. You know, I always remind them, guys, what's your why? Why are you doing it? You know, and I think you can never lose sight of that, you know, and then don't default to the industry process. Stick to your internal process. Don't fall into dropping your comms. Don't fall into just buying listings, over quoting, I should say. Um, don't don't buy into any of that. I think, and that comes back to your training and your diligence and your capabilities as an agent. Like, you really should be able to quantify your value to the person sitting across the other end, under the other end of the table in any market. And all storms pass, you know. And I think people get so clouded in what's in front of them because it's stressing them out right now. It's going to pass, you know. And I think if you stay consistent, and that's why your standards are really important. You know, habits are good, but standards set habits. So make sure that you're raising your standards for yourself. So you've got good habits, setting good routine, you know. And that routine compounds into consistency. And if you're constantly doing all of that, if things are tight, it's going to compound and it's going to turn. But you've got to just stay consistent, you know, raise your standards with yourself and just don't deviate from it, I think. And just remember your why, like, why are you doing it? Because you need that why, and you need that intent behind the why to push you through the shit times, because there's a lot of them in real estate. It's
up and down, yeah.
Up and down like a yo-yo. So, and just remind them to just have intent and, you know, and just remind them of the caliber of people that they are.
What are the sorts of things, you know, you just said sell your value. What are the sorts of things you're finding from consumers that they're really valuing from an agent right now?
It's honesty. Like, I think the difference with us, the difference in our business is actually by the way that we negotiate. So we transact about 150K higher than any agency in Canberra, pound for pound with the highest performing agency now in Canberra, break all the records, all that stuff. But it's
Canberra is super competitive.
It is super competitive.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Very proud of the team. But it's done. I think the difference now from the consumer side of things, it's done from an educational and a transparent platform. You're not buying listings. You're not doing the stock standard industry process. You're really quantifying your value and positioning yourself as the conduit to the result for the consumer. They need to know that you can quantify your value to them to charge what you're going to charge to get them to where they need to go. And it's that forms trust equity, which is one of the biggest things that we're always harping on about. But it's the same thing with a buyer. So you need to be able to quantify your value and your positioning and always position yourself with both as a conduit for the buyer to get to where they need to go for the property and for the seller, you know, to the market to get them to where they need to be. And I think that's the biggest thing.
I recently did a webinar with Will Ainsworth, who's a bit of a legend, and he actually, in his appraisal meeting, he actually did this demonstration of a negotiation to the vendor.
Yep.
It's like that old expression, you know, don't tell me you're funny, make me laugh. And I said to him, that's amazing. So you do that. You used to do that. Yeah.
And I think you need to be able to walk the walk. And I think that's the other thing, that's a lot of people talk the talk. You need to really be able to, and you need to level up. Like, we're a hybrid business, so we're a project and resi business. So we've got transferable skills that help us negotiate and tighten up quantifiable value right at the top end. So if there's $100,000 or, you know, $200,000-$300,000 gap that needs to get bridged from what the data says to what the owner wants, generally most of the time we can get it because we can quantify that value back to the buyer using different skill sets. So we're not, and I think that anti-agent thing's probably going back to not being a one-dimensional agent. Do you know what I mean? So I had a hotel that I got under offer. It fell over because ACT Health leased it for 6 months, but I put a $73 million deal together with a hotel. Never sold a hotel before in my life, but I pulled the skill sets from projects, resi and commercial deals that I was doing. And it's all transferable. And I think, you know, and that's probably the other thing for agents as well, is level up and, you know, in terms of your training, there's so many different areas in real estate that you can draw experience from. They're all very different. Like, project sales and resi sales are vastly different. But if you can do both, you're going to excel better in both if you can get a handle on aspects of each. And that compounds. That compounds in your skill set. And I think if you're a seller sitting on the other side of the table, you'd want to know from the agent that they can quantify that value to you. And you as the agent need the runs on the board and the experience to be able to actually demonstrate that, like your mate did, for them to go, okay, that makes sense. Data says this, I want this, you're saying that. And it's educational. And I think if you're starting that process with a seller from an educational standpoint, when the time comes to have a hard conversation, if you've got the warm zone, the hot zone, and data might not reflect where they want to be, but, you know, if you're having an honest, transparent conversation around and an education one around, like, where they're positioned, where they want to go, and the skill sets you possess to be able to bridge, and you've got to demonstrate the gap. And the best thing to do is just be honest. You want 2 mil, it's worth 1.7. We've got to make up 300K. This is what I've done in the past. Here's some other examples of what I did. the owners wanted similar. Data didn't reflect it, but this is how I did it, X, Y, and Z. But then it's the same with the buyer. If the buyer doesn't want to pay it, well, you've got to be able to demonstrate to them that it's worth what the seller wants, or find the price in the middle. You know, and I think the quicker you can do that and the quicker you can make information like that digestible to a consumer in those meetings, it just forms such a base of trust. And that trust equity are your leverage points in a negotiation. And that's where you can quantify value and pull prices up. And I think too, that goes back to, you know, when the markets flatten out when it flattens out and things get a little bit harder, the good agents that have vast skill sets like that will always go really well.
Yeah, you can tell, like even the dialogue you were just using then, I sort of felt like if I was the vendor, you were working really hard for me.
Yeah.
Like,
And
it's not just flipping through a
pack one, pack two, this one, two, three Smith Street sold for this, and we'll let the universe decide what it's worth. You know, at the end of the day, I think that's the other thing too. Agents forget their position in the deal. You're the conduit to the result. You know, and these guys are putting million-dollar assets in your hands. And if they want a couple of hundred grand more than what the one next door sold for, well, your job is to get it. And obviously the buyer wants to feel like they got a good deal too, but it's – and I think too, that's where the project side of things really help our business, I think, across the board. I think that's what's really resulted in a lot of these records, because it's that last push for that top end of the price. It comes from a different skill set. It's not just the – chuck it up for auction and hope. You can't plan on hope.
Hope's not a strategy.
Hope's not a strategy.
Someone taught me that. I was just about to ask you, what words of advice would you have for younger agents starting out in this market? But I think you've just given one cracking piece of advice, which is to get experience in all different types of real estate.
Yeah.
But beyond that, is there any other sort of advice you give?
Just number one, be yourself. It's really hard when you know, it's all new. You're learning a new language, a new industry. You're trying to find your place, all that stuff. But be yourself. I think just learn as much as you can, the basics, the Tom Panos's, the Josh Fegards, all that stuff's great starting out just to get structure. I used to work in in triangles. So I'd pick three suburbs and I'd work, it's like trying to triangulate a signal. Like how, you know, if the police are trying to find your mobile phone, same thing. So if you can and I'd always operate in triangles, because it gave me a 3-point understanding of, you know, value within a region rather than just a suburb, so that I could hop between two, and then that would 3x, that would compound times 3, as opposed to just being an area expert. I could move between the areas. So I operated, you know, outside of just one particular area. So that's something too. Like, just think outside the box. Like, if you're just starting out, don't just do what everyone else is doing. Do the bits that work. You know, you get the basic structure that you can, but add your spin to it. You know, I think just let your personality come through, but have a plan as well. And I think whatever you're doing now, add 20% to it. You know, outwork. When you think that you're tired, pick up the phone and make another 100. I think you need to outwork yourself. You know, I think your internal dialogue as an agent, you know, mine was always, you know, it was just never stop. But just, I outworked myself, you know, and I think that's probably the biggest thing. I think don't get deterred. I think it's a marathon, not a sprint, like you'd hear in a lot of training podcasts and all the rest, but it really truly is, you know. And I think the effort, if you take the time and the care and the diligence to invest in yourself and the right knowledge and the right people, you know, and the right training, and you're proactive and not reactive to the market, you'll go well, you know. And I think, and be honest, treat people, it's a people business. The houses are just the commodity. Don't focus on the money and the cars and all the bullshit. Focus on doing a good job, creating reputation for yourself. Become elite, you know, become the best at what you do. You've got to get up anyway, so you may as well just get up and be the best, you know. Don't get up and be 60% of yourself. Get up and be 100% of yourself, you know. And I think be strict with yourself, and, you know, working in blocks is really good starting out. And don't procrastinate. You know, that's probably that's another really big one. No one likes making cold calls. No one likes door knocking. Just get out and do it, you know, because the reward's on the other side of it. You get rewarded for doing the hard shit, you know, and I think that's really important. And just bite-sized pieces as well. It's probably the last little bit, you know. Have a big plan, but just day by day, week by week. Don't think as you've had a shit week, your whole year's going to go to custard. Just bite-sized pieces. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day. And there's a lot to learn, you know, like to get to the top level and to get to probably where a lot of these guys want to get to that are just starting out. It takes time, you know, but just be clear about where you want to go, you know. And I think that's probably the big thing that no one told me when I started out is, you know, just be super clear and surround yourself with good people.
You just mentioned a couple of good resources and coaches and things like that, but are there any other books or non-real estate things that you think have been really useful?
Depends what your – so for me, real estate is – for me, real estate's a conduit to other things, you know. So a lot of the books I listen to, you know, sort of a lot of mindset, a lot of wealth creation. The Robert Kiyosaki books, all the Rich Dad, Poor Dad books are great. Think Big and Grow Rich is another really good book. And you just look at any real estate podcasts for people just, I think, starting out are great. The Mindset Mentor is a really good one just for some day-to-day, you know, keep you centered. There's heaps, you know, and I think just find one that works for you. Everyone's going to gravitate towards different stuff, but.
Well, Josh, it's been wonderful talking to you today.
Pleasure.
And thank you for coming in here and sharing some of your knowledge and your experience with us. I'm sure everyone's going to get a lot out of it.
No worries.
If there was one last thing that you'd like to leave listeners with, what would it be?
I think I'd just have to say, if you're going to get into real estate or into business or a leadership role, again, just know your why. Be really, really clear. If you're going to take on a leadership role within your team or within your business, I think just do it with intent, and I think do it with a plan, and just know that your actions do affect the people working for you. So I think if you're going to go all in, you know, don't do it half-hearted. And just enjoy the ride.
Yeah, amazing. Josh Morrissey, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast with thanks to connectnow.com.au. Don't forget to get access to all of Elite Agent's premium resources, including a detailed episode guide for this podcast. Visit joineliteagent.com.